This episode of the podcast is brought to you by First Row Collectibles. Visit firstrow.ca and use the promo code FNP at checkout for free shipping on your order today. We're also brought to you by Sisu, definitely the best mouthguard out there on the market. Visit sisuguard.com and use the promo code FNP10 to save 10% on your order. Special episode number 13. It's Friday, May 25th. Let's get into it. All right, episode number 13, Fight Night Picks podcast. We've got a special guest today, Ty O'Keefe, and let's get into it. So, yesterday, you had M1 Global Challenge 92 from St. Petersburg. I made my predictions on Tuesday. I'm going to recap that. I'm going to preview LFA 40. And then once Ty comes on, we're going to talk about Bellator 200 that's going on right now. But it's going to be on television 7 o'clock. The prelims are on Bellator's website. And at about 10 o'clock, you're going to have the main card by tape delay on Paramount Network. So we're going to give our predictions and we're going to not look at what's going on. As well, we're going to make our predictions on UFC Fight Night coming from Liverpool. So you get Till and Thompson in that one. But like I said, backtrack a bit from yesterday. You had M1 Global Challenge 92. Was kind of all over the place. You know, the two announcers, they were pretty surprised. You had a few disqualifications. There were two disqualifications in total. Rope grabbing, you're not allowed to do an M1. If you're not totally familiar with M1, they don't have a cage. You know, Bellator, they kind of have a circular cage, and UFC, obviously, they have the octagon. And in M1, it's almost kind of like a kickboxing and MMA ring in one. So they've got a cage around the lower half, and then there's two ropes, and, you know, you've got your turnbuckles and everything. So when you have a fighter in the ring, if they get pushed up against the turnbuckle or pushed up against the ropes, they're not allowed to grab them for support. So a few fighters, you know, it's almost instinct to kind of grab or to kind of keep yourself in the corner. But in a couple of cases, it ended up in a disqualification. So one disqualification due to rope grabbing, another disqualification due to an illegal soccer kick to a downed opponent. And he had a 4-point stance, like he was on the mat. And the guy kicked him in the head, so he looked quite injured. And there were also some blatant illegal groin shots. There was an illegal spinning elbow in M1. You're not allowed to throw elbows like standing. So one guy, it almost looked like he was going for a spinning back fist, but his arm was kind of bent, and he ended up hitting his elbow against the other fighter. So another illegal strike there. But your co-main event, I had told you take Alexander Deskalchuk to hold on to his belt. You know, it was a title unifier belt for the flyweight championship. So he's taken on Armin Ashimov. Pretty much it was a one-sided fight. You know, Deskalchuk put a beating on Ashimov in the second round. And then in between rounds, Ashimov took off one of his gloves and kind of signaled that he had broken his hand or his knuckle. So once the gloves are off, the fight's over. So good win for Deskalchuk, and eager to fight again coming up soon. You had your heavyweight main event. It was between Sergei Kharitonov and Anton Vizigin. You know, Vizigin, prospect in M1. Kharitonov, you know, legend. He had fought, like I'd said, Arlovsky, Verdum, wins over them. Big wins. So they promoted it. Didn't spend too much time on Vizigin. You know, Kharitonov, on his way into the ring, he had his own singer, but he didn't look like he was totally that invested in the fight, which was kind of surprising. And it's tough for me to say that. I mean, I'm not in his corner. I don't know exactly what was going on, but Vizigin, I thought, won the first round. He was able to get Kharitonov down. He had two hooks in on the ground. Looked like he was going to get the win. Kharitonov got back up. Fight continued. And then 20 seconds into the second round, Vizigin kind of made a swipe at Kharitonov's face and caught him in the right eye. And as soon as it happened, Kharitonov, he kind of turned and motioned to the referee, and all of a sudden the referee kind of called a stop to the fight just for safety. Of course, Kharitonov, you know, he was given 5 minutes, but pretty much as soon as it happened, he kind of called the fight off on his own. He didn't look like he wanted to fight. They brought a doctor in, and they shone a light on his eye. It didn't look too bad. Obviously, I'm not in his shoes, so it's kind of hard for me to comment on it, but it didn't look like it was that bad. And, you know, he signaled that he didn't want to continue. So instead of a no contest, due to the M1 rules that they have in place, round one had fully taken place. So right there, fight had to go to decision, and they gave it to Karatana by majority. I was pretty surprised. Of course, I don't speak Russian, so once they announced their decision, he grabbed the mic, and he had some things to say. They called up the founder and CEO of M1. He came up and said a few words to the crowd. And I actually saw just recently on Twitter that the commission and the CEO of M1 got together, and they decided that the Karatana Vizijin fight will now be a no contest, and there's going to be a rematch in the future. So that's good to see. It was a head scratcher of a decision, and it's pretty surprising, really, what they've done. But yeah, no contest. It was a weird fight. It was a weird vibe that I got from the entire event. There was an illegal strike at one point on the ground, and for some reason the referee allows hammer fist on the feet if an illegal strike's performed. Like, it was just, there were a lot of weird things that went on, and I was really looking forward to that main event, and it didn't deliver. I mean, it wasn't as bad as, you know, Usman and Maya per se. I mean, Usman and Maya was more entertaining. You know, it went the full five rounds. They went at it. Usman had, from his, what he had said, you know, he had broken both hands. And in this fight, I don't know. I don't know what happened. But Karatanov, you know, he got that eye poke, and that was pretty much it. Didn't want to fight. So that was the way it was. Fight's coming up this weekend. Like I said, Ty and I were going to preview UFC and Bellator, so sit tight. But first, LFA 40. The poll that I had up on Twitter, I think 60% voted that they were most excited for UFC Liverpool, 30 for Bellator 200 tonight, and then 10%, so somebody had voted for LFA Dallas. So you got LFA 40 coming at you from Dallas tonight, 9 o'clock Eastern on, the old Access TV. Main event, another title unification bout between in the featherweight division between, Kevin Aguilar, he's current champ, 13-1, Angel of Death, taking on 8-1 Than Lee. You know, Than Lee, if you watch any of the Ultimate Fighter, he competed on there at one point, and he was also on the Dana White Contender Series, so some might be familiar with him. Aguilar, he's been in the LFA for quite a while, and he had a one-fight deal in Bellator at one point. Take the champ to keep his belt, is what I'm going to say. Take Aguilar to retain, and your co-main tonight, you got 14-2-1 Damon Jackson taking on Jeremy Spoon, who's 21-3. I mentioned on Monday, you know, Spoon's mostly fought on the regional circuit. A lot of fights in Oklahoma. Had three fights in Bellator. Lost to Daniel Strauss at one point. And, you know, Jackson fought a little bit in the UFC. Has some experience in Bellator, too. Notable loss to Yancy Medeiros. Definitely take Jackson to win the fight. A lot more experience in his corner versus that of Jeremy Spoon. So we had Curtis Housen on a few weeks ago from First Row Collectibles. I was over on his website there today, www.firstrow.ca. I mean, they've got MMA autographs, wrestling memorabilia, hockey cards. Like what I saw today, they had a Bret the Hitman Hart wrestling card autographed, a nice former Toronto Raptor Damari Carroll autographed basketball card, and they had a lot of Jerry the King Lawler signed cards as well. And they've got some pretty cool mystery packs too. They toss a combination of autographs and different things in there. And I think I've mentioned as well before that they've got some older editions of Sports Illustrated on the older 60s edition. So if you head on over to First Row, use the promo code FNP at checkout for free shipping. And like I said before, their prices are in Canadian dollars. So to our American listeners, keep in mind, you're probably going to save roughly 25% on your purchase. Also brought to you today by Sisu. I've had a Sisu mouthguard for a number of years now. I've told the story just about every podcast, you know, the one game that I didn't wear my mouthguard, honest to God, lost one of my front teeth, and it was a pain. I had a cap on there for a little while, and I had a gray tooth, so eventually I had to get a crown on it. Took time away from work. It was a pain for me. It cost me probably $1,000 out of pocket. So if you go with Sisu, they offer $35,000 dental warranty that's good for a year. and that'll cover any out-of-pocket expenses you might incur if you get hurt while wearing the mouth guard. And if you head on over to my website, fightnightpicks.net, I've got a link to their website as well, and you can see what their mouth guards are all about. They're really thin, boil and bite a lot better than your conventional mouth guards. So without further ado, I'm going to bring on Ty O'Keefe. We're going to talk about UFC and Bellator, make our predictions, analyze them. I mean, this is the moment you've all been waiting for. Some of Ty's articles, he works with Fansided, Sports Illustrated, as well as the Fight Network here in Canada, and you've probably seen him all over the internet. So here's Ty O'Keefe. Yeah, awesome to have you. How'd you get into MMA journalism?
I had an accident in 2007. I was a really active guy, and all of a sudden I was quadriplegic.
Yes, sir.
And after sitting around feeling sorry for myself for a few years, like a lot of people do, I started covering, I've always been into sports as an athlete. I was into, actually, I was into gambling on sports quite a bit, football, baseball, basketball. So in 20 March of 2013, I started covering baseball, basketball, football, and MMA. And I bounced around from different websites, as you do, kind of work your way up. And I got lucky. USA Today, I caught their eye early, and I was a college basketball expert for the 2014 NCAA tournament. And then Spike TV found me at this tiny little website, and it was CJ Tuttle, the guy who still is now Bellator's PR guy.
Yeah.
And he just started sending me all these press releases. And I was like, man, this is great. I love fighting. And so I tried to take advantage of that. And here I am. Last year, I switched strictly to MMA about a year and a half ago when these guys at Fansided and Sports Illustrated hired me. And then I'm also working at the Fight Network, which I think is important because, supporting Canadian MMA, I don't think we do enough of it for each other.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but no, it's and honestly now because of my disability now too, it fits my lifestyle. I'm very fortunate that it's something I can do like that. So
yeah, I mean, definitely still being involved in sports, that must be good for you for sure.
Oh yeah, yeah, it's hard when you lose that ability to go out there and like play ball or do whatever. You can play softball,
yeah.
So but I no reason to feel sorry for me. I'm definitely happy with the decision I made, and I couldn't be happier where I'm at right now. So
are you able to cover any sports in Canada? Like, do you cover TKO? Do you look at kind of events like that or more the UFC, the Bellators?
I do have to stick to UFC and Bellator strictly because that's what my editors want me to do.
Yeah.
There's so much demand for that content on Sports Illustrated and Fansided and the Fight Network site, as you know, that the guys who are covering the what I call the minor leagues of MMA, they tend to, like, Flow Combat does a great job of that.
Yeah.
And stuff. American especially, but we definitely need more of that, and I would love to do more of that in the future, but when you're trying to make your way up, you swing for the fences.
Yeah.
And that's what UFC and Bellator are. They're right now, that's where it's at, and that's where it's going to stay probably.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, with that, we might as well get right into Bellator 200. I know it's live right now on YouTube for people who are in the UK. And
yeah,
the prelims already got done, but we'll leave it all and make it kind of a bit of a surprise. Main event got scrapped. What did you think about that?
Well, I don't know. I was disappointed to see Krokop go out simply because that would have been an intriguing matchup. You got two heavyweight legends, and Roy Nelson, he fights to win.
Yeah.
I don't care if he's gassed, if he's out of shape, if he's on short notice, he, swings for the knockout. And I, it's amazing what Krokop is doing at his age right now. So, and Bellator has just flourished by grabbing these aging heavyweights,
yeah,
and making something of it. And it's about time they look to crown a heavyweight champion. I mean, come on. But yeah, that losing that fight is definitely tough. Also, I don't know if you saw, Roy Nelson was wandering around London the last couple of days, looking, literally asking anybody to step up. And I kind of wonder if Bellator was behind that or not. He's an odd guy, and I kind of wonder if Bellator would have really supported that.
Yeah.
I doubt they would have took some guy off the street and put him in the ring. But you never know. You never know. Scott Coker's a genius. So, he does a lot of great things. There's a reason he ran Strikeforce. But, yeah, losing that fight stuff, especially, I think Musashi and Carvalho should have been the main event anyways, to tell you the truth. That's a title fight.
Yeah,
I mean, you gotta, So I don't think it should have ever Nelson Krokop should have ever have been the main event.
Yeah,
but losing it, losing it, stuff, especially because you know, it's free. Bellator is always free. Obviously, this weekend's UFC fight is also free. But Bellator has become known for that and losing the opportunity to see Prokop. We don't know how many more times we're going to see him.
Yeah, I mean, especially like Ariel Helwani said it was either torn partially or sprained. So it was MCL, ACL, MFL, LCL, and MAL. Like, he tore everything in that knee.
Yep.
So,
yep. And
he wants to come back in October, which is highly unlikely. So,
yeah. Oh, yeah. And that, yeah, he's on borrowed time as it is.
Exactly.
The body does not heal like that. It's kind of like, you know, Andrei Arlovsky's doing the same type of thing. You got to wonder, it's like they're kind of ticking time bombs, these guys.
Yeah.
You know, they go, and then all of a sudden something will happen, and it's like, that's it.
Yeah.
You know, but then look at Chuck Liddell.
Exactly.
Chuck Liddell's 47 years old, and here he is. So,
yeah.
But no, that's definitely tough losing that fight.
And like you had said, I mean, guys that could have replaced him, I saw Phil DeFries' name was thrown out there. He's a KSW champ. I threw out the name Tim Johnson just because he hasn't fought in a while, and he just beat Marcelo Gomes in the UFC. But nobody seemed to want to take it. So, yeah, your main event now, the middleweight title fight, Rafael Carvalho and Gegard Mousasi. What do you think is going to go on in that fight?
Well, first of all, I think that, you know, the champ has been overlooked.
Yeah.
As Bellator champions are when they step into the ring with the UFC veteran. And Mousasi's not just a UFC vet. He's a veteran of so much. I mean, this guy started pro, I think he was 17, 18 years old. He has literally stopped in every promotion you can think of along the way. That experience is priceless. And I think that Carvalho is going to come in there with a chip on his shoulder, and he should. And the fact that, you know, yeah, he's never been beaten before, but look at his resume. Guys like Melvin Manhoff and stuff, they're not Gegard Mousasi.
Yeah.
So it will, you know, Mousasi will present him with the toughest test of his career. And we know Carvalho likes to stop fights early if he can. We know he likes to get in there and take advantage of things quickly if he can. And I think Mousasi is a patient guy. He will wait guys out, and he's so clever that he could trap a guy like the, you know, like the middleweight champion. And I personally lean on heavy on Mousasi.
Yeah.
And I expect yet another former UFC fighter to be crowned Bellator champion.
To me, I look at it as, you know, Gegard, if you take one fight that I think of is his fight against Chris Weidman. He was able to get the TKO, and Weidman's such a good wrestler, so it was really a matchup of strengths. You know, Carvalho's great on the feet. The one thing that he doesn't really have is that killer instinct. Like, you watch some of his fights, he'll get a guy rocked, and then he'll kind of stand back a little bit and wait.
Yeah.
But it's smart at the same time. I mean, you think 15 wins and 12 knockouts.
Oh, yeah, you don't do that by accident.
No, for sure. And he's not the type of guy, I don't know, yeah, you don't see him run in and go for a submission and get caught. So,
That killer instinct is priceless.
Exactly.
And if you don't have it against a clever guy, you'll pay for it.
For sure.
And Mousasi's not a knockout artist, but man, he'll trap you.
And he'll
wear you down.
And I mean, his last fight, Carvalho, the last fight against Alessio Sakara. Sakara's not Gegard.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, Gegard's heavy favorite. Most likely he'll win. But in his last fight against Shlemenko, I mean, it was a controversial decision, but I thought he lost that fight.
Yeah, and, you know, they expected that debut to go much smoother.
For sure.
That was Mousasi's coming out party.
Yeah.
And to see him struggle like that again, and I spoke to Mousasi last week on the Bellator conference call.
Yeah.
And I asked him if that had changed his the way he was preparing for this. And he kind of answered me, but he kind of just, you know, tied it up to, oh, of course I'll train differently for a title fight.
Yeah.
You know, but he didn't really want to. Yeah, he admitted that, yes, he was disappointed in his performance. But that does got to give you some cause to question what could happen, you know, in this fight. Because if Shlemenko can wear him down like that and take him off his game, you know, I the middleweight champion's no joke. And so you got to kind of wonder, there is that chance. But no, I'm going to go with Mousasi, and especially because Mousasi's type of guy, if he makes a mistake, then his next fight out, he will go out of his way to make sure that that same mistake is not made. Like, he'll get, you know, obsessed with it. And that's what makes him great.
Exactly. So you've got Gegard. I've actually got Carvalho to win, but agree to disagree, I guess.
Understandably, yeah, definitely.
Tough matchup. Co-main, I think it's kind of in the bag. MVP and Rickles. Rickles is a lightweight, more of a wrestler. MVP is a kickboxer. Hasn't fought since 2016, but he had that boxing bout there in October of last year, and he won. And then before that, his last fight in Bellator was against Fernando Gonzalez, and it was a split decision. But, I mean, you look at his knockout of Cyborg, and it proves why he's, you know, one of Bellator's top guys.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they and also, I think what his last three wins, I think he's won one by decision, one by KO, and one by submission.
Yeah.
You know, it's tough, though. It's tough, and he's undefeated, and he's explosive when he wants to be, but he's also learning as he goes. I don't think he's going to be one of these Bellator guys forever, because the UFC has to at some point, like they did with Eddie Alvarez or, you know, whatever, they're going to come knocking. But for this fight, you know, I do think Rickles is heavily overmatched. I think that Bellator needs to reexamine the lightweight division, because guys like Benson Henderson are no longer among, you know, the lightweight elite. Benson Henderson, they were counting on him to be one of those guys. And if Rickles is who they're coming up with for MVP at this point, what's next for MVP? So where's he go from here?
Like, to me, I think they're trying to set him up with a win, honestly. I mean, Rickles is what, 19-4. He's fought good competition. Yeah. He's lost to Chandler twice. He's lost to Patricky Freire. That MVP and Paul Daly fight, I mean, that's probably what's on the horizon. It was really disappointing for me to see Paul Daly. I mean, he knew what was going to happen with John Fitch.
So
it sucked to see him on the ground complaining and booing. But, I mean, he just signed with Ali Abdelaziz and new management. He's, I don't know, all of a sudden a breath of fresh air. But it'd be nice to see that fight.
And Daly, too, has spent a lot of this year saying he doesn't want to be a part of Bellator.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to leave. He doesn't. And now I see he's changing his tune, and that's great and everything. But you know he's changing his tune because he's not getting the reception beyond the borders of Bellator like he thought he would be, because his contract is up. He thought, oh, great, I'm going to get these offers. I might go back, you know, might hit the big leagues, and it's just not working out. And yeah, Daly's going to have to just kind of suck it up, I think, and accomplish more under the Bellator banner before he gets to where he thinks he is. Rory McDonald is clearly the, you know, Bellator's best welterweight.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. No. And but Page definitely is somebody who I think he's on borrowed time with Bellator, just simply because he's a commodity they cannot control.
Yeah, exactly. He'd be a good guy for the UFC. Sorry, I mean Bellator, where they have Bellator Kickboxing, they haven't really utilized him there. But if you went to the UFC and if Zuffa Boxing actually gets big, that'd be perfect.
Yeah. I think Zuffa Boxing will get big strictly with this new ESPN deal, even though it's not directly related. You know how ESPN just sucks in the crowd and draws so much attention that Fox can't be happy with that. So I think this Zuffa Boxing venture will. It's too bad we all had to suffer through Mayweather-McGregor to get to this point. But, definitely Page is unstoppable. Where he is right now. Interesting to see when he's up against top-notch competition.
Couple of guys talk about borrowed time. Fight before that, Phil Davis and Linton Vassell, two guys that have been at the top of the light heavyweight division. Yep. I mean, they both have 18 wins, but Davis lost the belt to Bader. Vassell lost when he fought Bader for the belt. Vassell also lost to Emmanuel Newton when he fought for the belt before that. So he's at a rough go. I think this one's another one. It's kind of an open and shut case. Both guys have a lot of decisions. I think it's 14 between the two of them. I'm pretty sure, to me, Davis is going to use his wrestling and win the fight.
Absolutely. And the thing with Davis is sometimes you expect him to do that, and he'll start being a puncher or stray from his game plan. And when he strays from his game plan, it works depending on who he's fighting, but he's so inconsistent. And that's the problem with if you're banking on guys, if you're really betting on guys, you know, a guy like Phil Davis to me is a huge caution. I run away from him, you know, because it just, and I think also everybody in that light heavyweight division, you know, look what happened to King Mo.
Yeah.
I know it's a heavyweight tournament. It's a heavyweight tournament, Grand Prix. King Mo's fought light heavyweight plenty of times. And Bader, 15 seconds, I think it was? Everybody in that light heavyweight division has now hit a ceiling since Bader's arrival.
Yep.
And Baylor is standing firmly on the top of that ceiling. And now he's standing so firmly on the top of that ceiling that he is competing as a heavyweight. Yeah. And like, it's a big joke, you know? So look at that. I mean, he's got some good years ahead of him. Interesting though. Do you think maybe once he earns a little bit of more success at Bellator, do you think maybe he goes back or tries to go back?
I mean, you look at his record in the UFC, he fought top competition. He was always in the top five in the light heavyweight division, but he was kind of overlooked. They get a lot of guys in, like, and the guys in the UFC, they're all starting to get a lot older. Like, when your top five, top 10 consists of Daniel Cormier, Glover Teixeira, I mean, Ilir Latifi's not a young guy. There's a lot of older guys, and then they're trying to market Go Kanzaki. I'm a really big fan, but at the same time, he's in his 30s. So Ryan Bader, he's what, 34? So he's not young, but at the same time, prime of his career. Great late heavyweight. And I've heard people talk about him becoming possibly the heavyweight champ. I mean, I overlooked him in this heavyweight tournament. I thought it was going to be cut and dry. Mitrione and Frank Mir. I thought that was going to be the final.
I've always kind of Mitrione Bader if it would work out in terms of the matchups, but Mitrione I knew was going to be there as well. But Bader is one of those collegiate wrestlers who has learned how to punch and everything else, but those guys seem to kind of flare out once they hit their early 30. A lot of them do, anyways. They kind of, you know, and who's, you know, say he wins the heavyweight Grand Prix, do we really think he's going to hold both titles at the same time? He's going to defend it. Is Bellator going to treat the heavyweight Grand Prix title the same as they treat the light heavyweight title? I mean, there's a lot of questions about that. But yeah, Bader has found a home for now. But as far as Phil Davis goes, I run from him, and I hope for the long shot. I think Vesiel still has a lot to prove in this game, and I don't think that Phil Davis is anywhere near where he thinks he is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He has had opportunity after opportunity. You know, he's had so many out in the UFC. He's had opportunities to be a champion. He's had, you know, I mean, he can't say the guy hasn't been given a chance.
Yeah.
So not, I'm going against him, definitely against Phil Davis. And if I'm wrong, I can still sleep at night.
That's fine. Fight before that, I didn't even know who the guy was. I went and followed him on Twitter, and he had what, 800 you know some what? Thousand followers.
You're not alone. I was in the same boat.
Yeah. So 3-0, all first round finishes. Fought in Bama, on the Jersey Shore reality TV show. Aaron Chalmers.
Hey, that's something. Yeah. Got the Jersey Shore reunion 8 years later. So hey, you never know. It's a career change.
Exactly. Taking on 4-5 Ash Griffiths, who's lost 3 in a row. I mean,
this is card filler. This, you know what I mean?
It reminds me of CM Punk and Mike Jackson.
Oh, God. Gosh, yeah. And, you know, I have my own opinions on the whole CM Punk situation. And that it's, yeah. But yeah, these guys, sometimes it makes me a little frustrated, like it did with Bellator NYC last year.
Yeah.
And I asked Scott Coker right about 2 weeks before Bellator NYC, and I said, you guys are planning on having a pay-per-view and attracting a whole ton of new people. I said, what are you going to do to keep them coming back once you get them? Because you have 90% of your stars on this card. You know, they overloaded these cards.
Yeah.
And then we get cards like this where we get, you know, a couple of solid fights. And then it, even though it's a main card, people like you and I who do this professionally are struggling to find out. And we're sitting here taking notes on guys, you know. Yeah. And to me, that's where Bellator's really got to pick up their game. You know, they got to stop with this card fodder and just, you know, they fill up. So, you know, they have more talent than that. I think they make better matchups. I think it was kind of a lazy matchup.
Yeah.
And if you and I are struggling to be intrigued by this fight, imagine your average fight fan.
Yeah. I mean,
think their turn? Yeah.
Like I get excited for a card if it's headlined by, like, let's just take a fighter, Alima Leigh McFarlane, champ. I get excited for that. Julia Budd, Canadian.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
you get
yeah.
excited. But to the average fight fan, they're probably not going to tune in if they see names like that that they don't recognize. I mean, for UK fans, I'm sure they're going to attract a lot of people to watch this with Aaron Chalmers. Yep. But to people in maybe North America that have never seen the show or have never heard of him as a fighter, don't watch Bama, it's not that big of a deal. So,
and that's even like the hardcore guys. Even the hardcore guys struggle to stay intrigued with that. And I've never understood, like, like they expected us to watch 12 rounds or all these preliminary fights before Mayweather McGregor last year and stuff. And it's the same type of thought process.
Yeah.
Why would you ask your hardcore fight fans to suffer through all of that crap and sometimes pay for it?
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes pay big money for some of these things when we know you guys can do better than this. And so when your hardcore fight fans are struggling to care, yeah, the masses aren't even, you know, paying attention.
And the real shame is, fight before that, that's a big fight. Anastasia Yankova taking on Kate Jackson. I mean, Kate Jackson fought on The Ultimate Fighter, fought Tatiana Suarez, who fought last weekend, and she's still undefeated as a pro. And, you know, Yankova 5-0, but she hasn't fought in a year. She looked kind of gaunt at the weigh-ins, I thought. She looked like she had cut a lot of weight, which I was kind of surprised by. Kate Jackson, to me, is the more well-rounded fighter. I mean, she lost to Valerie Letourneau in Letourneau's Bellator debut. But if you look at her record, I think she's got one submission win, some knockouts, some decisions. She's all over the place, but she's a lot more well-rounded, for sure.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I was impressed by Kate Jackson last year. I've been impressed by her. An opponent, like, you never know what you're going to get out of, like, when you say, you know, Yankova. There's a lot of other stuff that I've heard surrounding her.
Yeah,
that may be, you know, detracting from what she's doing. And obviously we can't validate whether that stuff is, you know, true or not. But it puts this dark cloud over someone who's trying to really make their way in the sport.
Yeah.
So regardless of the situation, you kind of got a feel for that if you don't care about MMA, because where are we going to get these new people, especially women's MMA? And Bellator really needs to build their women's divisions. They got to do something.
Like, I totally agree with you, 100%. And in the UFC as well, the 125-pound division, they haven't focused at all. They've given Nico Montano so much, like, flack, and it's not her fault.
She's a sitting duck.
Yeah, she just had surgery, like, a few weeks ago, and everybody called for her to accept the fight. Same thing with the featherweight division, women's featherweight division in UFC. I talk about it every week, but the only person they have announced on the app is Cyborg. That's it. There's nobody else. Holly Holm is ranked in bantamweight. And, there's nobody in that division at all. I mean, even Jermaine Durandamy's marked as
ran away.
Or bantamweight.
Yeah,
they
got Megan Anderson now, but I think Megan Anderson's fighting a whole bantamweight, is she not? I don't think they're going to featherweight fight.
They're going to fight.
And I don't understand. They have this vehicle. You know, everybody wants to get rid of the Ultimate Fighter. Get rid of the Ultimate Fighter, okay? I understand it's a stale format. I get it. People don't like it. I still enjoy it, personally. I've watched it since the beginning. So, you know, since Bonner Griffin. So I'm married to that. And the Contender Series is great. But the Contender Series does not offer the same amount of opportunities. And when you have a division like the UFC Women's Featherweight Division, that is so barren and dying just for people, But you can't even, they don't even have enough to do rankings.
Yep.
And yet here we are, yet another season, Ultimate Fighter goes by. Why would they not make one of these seasons, at least even if it's the last one, a women's featherweight season just to fill the division?
Yep.
And they've really, I think they've missed an opportunity there. You know, create it for Cyborg, great, but now the number one fight to make is Cyborg Nunez, and it's not going to really have anything to do with the featherweight division.
Flyweight, to me, is a perfect division there because you've got so many fighters on the fringe at 115 that can move up. You've got 135ers that can move down, like Shevchenko. Dern could go up.
Interchangeable,
I mean, there's even talk that they might come up with an atomweight division, which there's a lot of talent there in Invicta for atomweight. So
Those are fairly big in Asia too, Southeast Asia's like that. They're the atomweights. They're big out there, and they have some very talented women.
ONE FC's biggest fighter is like a strawweight, I guess, in the women's division. So yeah, I mean, see what happens in the women's division. I've got Jackson to win this fight, and I'm assuming
me too,
you
definitely.
Do as well. Okay.
Definitely, and there's no doubt. And if Yankova pulls it off, it'll be huge for her.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, the second if she does it, she's going to have to deal with all this other stuff that's come up. And I won't mention it. I'm not going to get into it, but it's ugly.
Yeah.
And whether it's true or not, if she wins, that's the first stuff that's coming.
Yeah.
And that's too bad, really.
Yep. 100%.
Unfortunate.
Fight before that, I had to do a little bit of research on these two guys. Could not believe it though. Mike Seabass Shipman, 11-1, won 11 fights in a row. taking on a guy who hasn't fought since what? In 7 years?
Six or seven.
So yeah, yeah. Shipman, I found it interesting. He beat Craig White, who's going to be fighting in the UFC this weekend.
Yeah.
And I think it's another one cut and dry. I think it's going to be a win for Shipman.
I agree. And based on the nickname alone, I mean, how can you not bank Seabass? I mean, who was that guy? Cam
Neely.
Yeah. In Dumb and Dumber, you know, that's Seabass. And, you know, Cam Neely was always Seabass. And so when you get that, I got to go for the nickname there. When I lack the knowledge, I roll with the nickname.
That's fair.
And I'm definitely rolling with Seabass.
When I went to UFC 200, the two biggest things I heard were Ric Flair woos and Seabass chants. So, yeah, yep. Might as well go with Seabass there.
Oddly enough, though, you will hear Seabass chants at every UFC event.
Yeah, that's fair. Put him in a body bag.
From what I hear, even in hotels, in the hallways and stuff. So I think there's a little bit of a Seabass mystique surrounding those events.
To me, on this card, like we had mentioned, I don't really get why the Aaron Chalmers fight is on the main card. But on the undercard, and I don't know, I kind of cheated and peeked a little bit on Twitter, but Charlie Ward's fighting on this card, and there's no build-up to it at all. I'm assuming that's because Conor McGregor hopped in the ring the last time, and they don't want to relive that. But
Yep, especially right now, considering the situation.
Exactly. And I see he's first row in the crowd as well. So
well, and his partner in crime who went to court with him was Sean Cowley or whatever. I'm not sure how to pronounce his first name. You know, I'm Irish and that's embarrassing to not know how to pronounce his first name. I heard he's been offered he's a fighter and he's been offered a contract recently with somebody. I might have even been Bellator. No, it was someone smaller than Bellator. But he's fighting, so obviously they're not completely standoffish of the whole situation. But yeah, it's kind of hard to know if these SPG products are gonna, you know, flourish or they're gonna suffer from their, you know, their relationship with McGregor. However, with Kavanaugh and Roddy there and those guys, you know, they have such a solid group, such a solid foundation that it seems like they've been able to kind of separate themselves from the whole McGregor outside of the thing. So yeah, but I don't think this fight should have been on there either. I wouldn't go with Ward just simply because I think there's too much stuff going on for him to get a good camp.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of, you know, and I think if anybody's looking to, you know, find one of those fights that's going to pay rent this month, that's not it. You know what I mean? Like,
no, that's fair. Like, I mean, if you look at Ward in the UFC, he lost his two fights. He got knocked out on a throw and he got knocked out by Abdul Razak Al-Hassan, who's really good in that division, man. That guy's got a huge future. I mean, his last two fights against the same guy, Sabah Humasi, and he looked great.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You can't go with Ward at this point. And if you do, you're kind of just, I think he's got a lot of work to do before he deserves a spot on a main card.
For sure.
So, and this fight definitely should have been a preliminary fight.
Moving on over, UFC on Sunday. Prelims are at 10:30 Eastern, and your main card's 1:00 Eastern. It's good and it's bad. I mean, one of my favorite cards that I've ever seen was the last UFC in Singapore with Holly Holm and Betch Kahaya.
Yeah,
I get to wake up, and as soon as I woke up early, it was over. So, like, I get to watch the whole thing. Fights that are off the card. Gunnar Nelson off the card. And I saw there yesterday, Manny Bermudez and Davy Grant, that fight's off the card as well.
Yeah, so, it is. It's too bad about Gunnar Nelson because he is so talented.
Yeah.
And there is no doubt about his ability, but he has lost at the wrong times. He has had some ill-timed losses that I've, you know, people thought that he was a top five guy.
Yeah.
For so long. And it's not like his ground game is nasty, lethal. But and he's learned to be a decent striker as well. But man, it's just that he doesn't seem to be able to put it together.
Yeah.
And he's kind of that momentum that was behind him is definitely evaporated. It's gone for now. And it's too bad though. But yeah, I wasn't surprised to hear that Gunnar Nelson was going to be fighting.
Your fight past prelims. I was listening to Aaron Bronstetter there just before we come on. And he was kind of talking with Joe that, you might see more guys wanting to go on the fight pass prelims, wanting to go on the prelims on TV to get that exposure. Yeah. So we've got our Canadian friend, Elias Theodorou, behind me on the wall.
Main event.
Yeah.
He's you're a supporter.
fighting Trevor Smith. You know, Theodoru 3-2 in his last five. I mean, they're all of them have gone to decision, whether it was a win or a loss.
Yeah. He's not a finisher.
No. And Trevor Smith, same thing. I mean, 3-2 in his last five, four of those fights went to decision. And, the one loss, it was a KO loss, true KO to a guy who just fought in M1 a week or two ago. So I think Theodore was going to do the same thing he did with Dan Kelly. And he's just going to strike, kick, 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 keep distance.
Yeah, wear him down.
Yeah.
Don't engage. Don't get in the clinch. Don't risk getting tossed on your head. You know, he likes to do that and try to pick you apart. The thing is with him is that he's got obvious talent and whatever, but I think Theodoro, he's got so much else going on. I mean, he's modeling and he's the ring card boy and everything.
Couldn't agree with you more.
Good for him.
Yeah,
I mean, great. That's great. You wanna branch out. You only have a certain amount of time to do this in your life. So I understand him wanting to capitalize on these opportunities. If any one of us had them, we would probably do the same thing. Many of us would, at least. But he is not a finisher, and I think he's destined to be one of these fight pass guys.
Yeah.
And what you were saying before about fighters wanting to fight on fight pass and wanting to fight on these preliminary cards makes a lot of sense, especially now with the ESPN deal. I realize Fox was a major player, you know, at the same level of ESPN when it comes to domestic coverage within the United States, especially. I've lived in the United States a very long time. I'm in Canada now, but they're about equal in terms of that. But I think you're right. There's going to be more exposure, more opportunity, and that could lead to more not sponsorship in the octagon, obviously, because God forbid we can't do that anymore. But you know, these guys will have other, it could give them opportunities outside of the octagon, you know, that to do other things. And as we know, these fight pass fighters, these preliminary fighters, they're not making the money that the main card guys are. So you got to supplement that somehow, whether it's financially or with exposure or whatever. So you can't, I say anybody who wants to do that, even if they're career main card guys, you know, good for them.
Yeah.
Because, you know, why not? Why not?
Like,
you know,
where
it's crowded at the top.
Yeah, where we're seeing Overeem and Blades going down.
Exactly.
I mean, that makes sense. On this card alone, when I look through it, I'm pretty sure that some people had done the same thing on this card. You know, you've got Gina Mazzani and Lena Landsberg on the undercard. It kind of makes sense, but they're both top 15 in their division. You've got
shallow divisions though.
Like Carlo Pedersoli Jr. coming off a big win in Cage Warriors. I mean, he just beat Nicholas Dalby quite badly. Yep. Both are former UFC guy.
And Dalby gave Till quite a headache.
Yeah.
Did he not?
Yeah.
He fought him to a draw, right?
Yeah,
majority draw, nasty time.
And, I mean, Pedersoli taking on Brad Scott. Brad Scott had lost to Jack Hermanson, who's had a pretty good career in the UFC, Christoph Jotko, and Robert Whittaker. So, to me... I think that's going to be fight of the night, the Pedersoli fight. I think he's going to win. I think he's going to be a star. Really.
I like it. It's a dark horse candidate, bold, but I can see your logic behind that. And, you know, that to expect to get the best fights out of the main card is just naive at this point.
That's true. I mean, to me, it
makes no sense.
Like last weekend, I had picked, I don't think it was, but fight of the night for me was going to be Enrique Barzola and Brandon Davis. I figured they're two guys. Yeah. Barzola was a bit more technical. He's kind of more calculated in his strikes, but Brandon Davis just kind of, I just want to bang, bro. That's kind of his style.
Yeah.
It didn't really work out that
way. Let
me
bang, bro. Let me bang. Yeah, those guys.
Didn't really work out well, but that Chile card to me. It was kind of a head scratcher. Some of the fights on there, like the Guido Cannonetti fight on the main card. That was it made sense because Rivas was from Chile, but at the same time it didn't make a whole lot of sense. And I had mentioned like UFC in Halifax, they had Gavin Tucker and Sam Cecilia. And it made total sense because Tucker pieced him up. But sometimes those fights don't make a whole lot of sense.
And it's not like Chile's got whole bunch of UFC caliber fighters to throw on these cards. So it turns out, you know, you have a card like UFC Chile, which is great for exposure. It's great to see the UFC going, reaching as far out as they can globally. That's fantastic because MMA, I've always believed, is really, I mean, soccer kind of, but MMA really is the only sport that touches all walks of life. There's not really any there's no racism, there's no sexism, there's no, you know what I mean? It is the most equal opportunity, even for men and women. The pays, you know, it's definitely an equal opportunity sport, and that's one of the things I love about it. But yeah, it turns out when you go to Chile and things like that, it ends up being more of an international event than a Chile event, you know, and you know, that's way like Gdansk. Till knocked out Cerrone, I think that was in Poland.
Yep.
You know, things like that. We're just going to have to accept that when they go to these places that are yet to be fully developed, these are international, you know, these are international type cards, not, you know, not local.
And it was a shame there too, where they lost Ponzinibbio.
As well. He's dangerous.
Yeah.
He's dangerous, man. He's got a ton of potential. He's got so much potential, and he hits hard, and he's been a little more patient, but you know, I could see him, you know, a year or two, if he stays healthy and things like that, he's got big things ahead.
Main card this weekend. Might as well get to it. Eric Spicely and Darren Stewart. I did the best research I could on these two guys. And honestly, I had a hard time trying to pick a winner.
Thing is that they both need to win badly.
Yeah.
They both need to win badly. I think Spicely's going in with two straight losses.
And Stewart's got three?
Yeah. And as we know, the three, you know, you lose three fights in a row in the UFC, that's often the chopping block.
Yeah.
And so you got to kind of wonder. Now, because Spicely has a little bit more experience, I guess you kind of lean on Spicely. I can't believe this is a main card fight in the first place.
Yeah, I know.
This deserves to be, like, buried. You know, and it's nothing against them, but the middleweight division, you know, is not going to be affected one way or another by the outcome of this bout. Yeah. And neither of these guys are going to do anything except for delay the inevitable.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're just delaying the inevitable. Good for them because it's a paycheck.
Yeah.
But if you want to get frustrated, you know, you start doing research and banking on those fights, because man, if guys come in with desperation like that, you kind of wonder what kind of camp they had.
Yeah,
You wonder if they're gonna, how's their cardio. You wonder, is the desperation gonna make them stray from their game plan, either Stewart or Spicely? Are they gonna stick to it, or are they gonna see an opening and be like, oh my god, first win in how many years, and swing, and then that's it, and they get exposed and they're out? So yeah, I'm rolling with Spicely just on a hunch. But I don't recommend anybody else following my lead on that.
I would take Spicely as well. I think he's going to be able to push Stewart back. Unless Stewart counters with something, he'll be able to grapple him and get the win. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fight I'm quite excited about, the Nordine Taleb-Claudio Silva fight.
That is an interesting matchup.
Taleb training at TriStar. You know, he beats Silva. If you look at the metrics on the UFC website, he beats him by most metrics. He's taller, he's longer. He's 3-2 in his last five. I mean, he lost to Ponzinibbio, so you can't fault him there.
Yeah,
he
lost
to Warley Alves. And Warley Alves kind of went through a rough patch, but I think he's found his game again.
And
he's definitely an exciting fighter. But Silva, he's won 11 in a row, and he hasn't fought since 2014. So it's kind of tough.
There's no real reason for that. He didn't fight anywhere else. He just kind of been laying on the shelf.
Yeah.
And was he 35, I think, maybe?
Yeah, he's 34, 35, and Taleb's also. He's 36. Like
But Taleb's been active.
Exactly.
And as you know, as a fellow Canadian, you know these guys at TriStar are no joke. If you're at TriStar, that's one of the reasons I still pay attention to Deodoro, guys like that, because they still work up there. But, you know, Nordine Taleb is a talented guy. I think Taleb is just, he outmatches his opponent. He's just far better. And I don't think we're going to see much. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a lopsided, you know, type of affair. Hopefully he doesn't go to a decision, because Taleb could really use a decisive victory right now to kind of get him out of that bottom feeder status and into, you know, something more significant. But yeah, I'm definitely going with Taleb.
For sure.
Definitely.
Both got Taleb.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Jason Knight, Makwan Amirkhani. That should be a good fight. That should be a really good fight. I think it's going to spend most of the time on the ground.
Of course it will. Jason Knight doesn't want to do anything else.
No. And Amirkhani in his last fight against Arnold Allen, I think that was probably his strongest point. So,
yeah.
If you look at the strikes, I mean, like, if they were to stand, I doubt it, but, like, Jason Knight, way better striker. What was it? 3.51 strikes per minute versus Amir Khan. He's 1.73. Yeah. He absorbs more, but at the same time, he throws more.
I can't believe Knight's only 25. It seems like he's been around for a very long, long time. It seems like he's been around since I was in college, and I'm old. he's never really broke out of mediocrity.
Yeah.
You know, he's never really broke through that kind of, hey, look at me. And if he has, it's been very brief. Yeah. It's been very brief. But I'm definitely going with Knight. Amir Khan has never impressed me. Allen, like you said, I mean, he's had some Amir Khan's had some tough losses, Allen, stuff like that. But he's just not, I don't know, I'm kind of surprised Amir Khan is still in the UFC with the amount of talent that we've seen come in from all these other places. I don't think he's going to be around much longer. And if he is, good for him. That'd be great if he is, good for him. But, you know, definitely Jason Knight. I think Jason Knight's going to submit him. And I hope it doesn't go to the decision for the sake of the fans, unless you got some real grappling addicts out there. Guys who are just, like, right up against the screen and they know every single, you know, name of every submission and, you know, things like that. Great. Enjoy it. Because, you know, Jason Knight's great on the ground. But, yeah, I'm going with Knight, definitely submission. I say second round.
To me, I think, Knight's going to win by submission. And I think Amir Khan, the one quirk about him, they list him as being from Kurdistan on the UFC website. So
I noticed that.
Probably the only fighter from that region of the world.
Oh, definitely. Well, at least active.
Exactly.
You don't see them, They're busy over there these days,
Fight after that, Arnold Allen, we mentioned him, 12-1, 3-0 in UFC, taking on Mads Burnell. This was a tough one to me. I mean, maybe main card normally. Mads Burnell, his fights so far have been kind of boring. I mean, largely, he's a grappler. In my opinion, Allen probably has more in his tool belt. And I think it's going to be a pretty easy win for Allen. He's also a big favorite in the fight as well.
And he's also a big Bruce Lee fan. And you know these guys who are MMA guys and they're Bruce Lee fans, they'll whip out some sort of Enter the Dragon kick if they think they've got an opening.
And in his last fight, he had Feroz in his corner.
Yeah, and which is a great corner, man. I mean, if you've got Zabi in there, you're doing all right. Obviously, they have Burnell needs a win badly. Yeah. You know, he can't sit around at 1-1 in the UFC and hope for opportunities for advancement. Allen is also, I think he's isn't he a purple belt or a black belt in BJJ? He's Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's from Gracie Barra. I think I read somewhere he did go with Gracie Barra. Either way, I'm going with him, with Allen, without question, simply because I think he's a little more experienced. Although, weren't they both, I believe they were both amateur boxers, and which kind of adds a different fold to it. I know Burnell was an amateur boxer, I think that could add a different fold to the fight if it gets to that, but I don't think it'll get to that point. I really don't. I think Allen will make quick work of him.
Yeah, and I think Allen's definitely, you know, he's a promising guy in the featherweight division, somebody that people should definitely have a look at because, I mean, he's a better grappler and striker statistically than Burnell is. Like I said, big favorite, and he should be able to get the win. Another thing to note, Burnell missed weight by 5 pounds in his last fight. Something to watch out for.
Yeah, these weight cutting issues are getting out of control here. We need to, that's a big issue. I feel strongly about these guys being forced to fight closer to their natural weight and being monitored throughout maybe a 90-day period leading up to the fight, so we don't have things happen like it did to Nurmagomedov last year.
Yeah,
and other guys just collapsing. I mean, these are premier athletes and at world-class athletes, and they're in a system where they can compete with NFL players in terms of running, jumping, whatever. Yet in the most important days leading up to the fight, they're depleting their body of everything. And then, which is their strength, which is their athletic ability, which is the fuel for all of that. And then jamming as much calories, as much water and everything in 24 hours before the fight to get back up to whatever you can for the fight itself. That just seems so contradictory. I mean, it's just so inefficient. It's just so long term. It's got to be horrible on your health. You know, we're going to find out. You know, that's one thing about MMA. There's so many things. It hasn't been around long enough for us to see. We know they don't suffer the type of head damage boxers do. However, this weight cutting issue is going to be a problem.
But definitely. Definitely terrible for sure.
Maybe for another day. Yeah.
Exactly. Co-main. So we had said Gunnar Nelson out of the fight. You got Neil Magny, late replacement Craig White, making his promo debut, 14-7. If you're going to pick White in this fight, good. I'm not. Yeah. To me, Neil Magny's such a long fighter. He's able to withstand damage.
Yes.
If you watch his fight against Hector Lombard, I mean, Lombard had him beat so bad, and then all of a sudden he was able to mount the comeback. It's hard to get a long, lanky guy like that into any type of submission on the ground. And he's good at backing up against the cage and getting out of danger. So to me, I don't really see many ways that Craig White's going to be able to get the win.
No, and Magny's got a ton of experience, even though he hasn't come through in some opportunities where, you know, if he would have won a certain fight, he would be maybe a top 6-7 guy.
Yep.
And he's missed it. But you're right. His reach, it seems like he's got that wingspan of, like, he reminds me of like Joel Embiid. Center for the Philadelphia 76ers.
Joel Embiid, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like these guys, you know, he's just got this wingspan. Magny's got it. Now, hopefully, maybe because they're both British, we'll get the crowd going in it, and it'll get a little crazy. And you know, maybe, and if White pulls off the upset, that'll be the talk of the whole card, probably.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not like Magny hasn't lost opportunities before. I personally am going with Magny. You cannot bet against Magny when he's facing a guy making his promotional debut like that. Magny's just got too much experience.
And experience, he trains at a great team in Colorado. Yep. He's got great cardio. I mean, former military guy, so he's got all that working for him.
Absolute athlete. Yep, you're absolutely right.
For sure. Main event, I think we're going to disagree. I've read some things you've written so far about it. I'm on the hype train. I think that Darren Till is going to overpower Stephen Thompson. I think if you watch his fight against Cowboy, it was a depleted Cowboy. It was a Cowboy that was coming off some bad fights. Finally, he's been able to get back on the train. But, I mean, he beat Yancy Medeiros. That's kind of an easy win, in my opinion.
But he needed it.
Exactly. And I think against Edwards, he's going to have problems. But in this fight, you watch Wonder Boy, and I think, you know, his last fight, he beat Masvidal. Watch UFC 205. Watch him fight Tyron Woodley. He got dropped. He got rocked. And it looked bad on him. I think Darren Till is going to be able to do the same thing. He's the bigger guy for sure. He's got a lot of power. Maybe not as much as Woodley. And we haven't been able to see the power from Woodley lately.
No.
But
no.
I think he's got that going for him. 16-0-1.
Yep.
Kind of a hometown fight. It is a hometown fight. He's from Liverpool.
He's not just from England.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
and Wonder Boy, reluctant to take the fight.
Absolutely.
His dad definitely didn't want to take the fight.
It's not, they weren't fighting forward.
No. So, I mean, Wonder Boy is your number, well, wherever he is in the rankings. It was number one when I checked. And Till's number eight. So I've got Till to win the fight.
You know, I have a column that I'm finishing in about, as soon as we're done here, on Till. Coming, and so it's going to be on the SI fan-sided. So I'll tweet it out. Maybe your opinion will change a little bit. But I, the thing is, first of all, Thompson's coming off of two injuries to his thumbs.
Yep.
Okay. We don't know how he's going to handle that. Those are his hands are his everything. And if there is, he chose not to have surgery. He's just been having physical therapy. Now, he is not the type of guy who's going to absorb punches well. And based on his experience and things like that, I think he has the potential to touch up Till just as long as he just comes in and out, stick and move type thing. You know what I mean? If he gets too far in the clinch, Till is a massive welterweight. He's got the nasty left hand power. And I do not buy that Stephen Thompson is not impressed with Darren Till. Also, I've heard him say he's not impressed. And I've heard him say good things about Till as well in the past few weeks.
Yeah.
So, however, Till, as long as he doesn't, I worry about Till getting overexcited. Seeing an opening from a karate guy who is by nature elusive, like Lyoto Machida, these karate guys that's what you do not get hit. That is your goal when you're a karate guy, to not get hit. And Thompson's always impressed me, but I haven't seen enough of Till. I've seen him fight a few times. Cerrone was down on his luck. I've never seen Cerrone dominate like that. And everybody's beating Jorge Masvidal, it seems like.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I mean? And then I also read something yesterday where Stephen Thompson said Masvidal was better than Till. And you know, that's laughable at this point. So I'm not as leaning towards Thompson as I was. I'll stand behind that. If you want to, you know, I wrote one thing, but I'm also really undecided about this fight. To tell you the truth, at the end of the day, I have not made my final decision. As a columnist, I've tried to look inward at myself, but try to look at those guys, where they're coming from, what their situation is, what they've done to prepare. Thompson preparing with his brother-in-law, Chris Weidman, I think is going to help a lot because Till, again, is a big welterweight. However, with that home crowd, Liverpool is passionate. They are passionate, passionate like New York City sports fans. You know what I mean? They will eat you. And I think that there's a separate fire that Till's going to get from that. Also, we're talking about a guy who was stabbed twice in his back, Darren Till, as a teenager. And instead of running, instead of saying, oh, retaliation, like a lot of the problems going on all over the world with gangs and everything else, he ran to the gym as soon as he recovered, and then he went to Brazil by himself for 4 years.
Nobody talks about that. Nobody focuses on the fact that he went to Brazil. He learned from the culture. Yeah.
My column will be out in about an hour. That's in there. I wrote parts about this because my column was about how Till is dealing with the pressure.
Yep.
You know, he did learn a lot from headlining against Cerrone, but it's a different animal when you're headlining a very recent title challenger and in your own backyard.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? This is not Gdansk. This is not Donald Cerrone.
Yeah.
There are levels to this game, as we've heard many times. And Donald Cerrone, unfortunately, I love Donald Cerrone. He's a great fighter. He's done so much for the sport. Nothing he does is boring to me. But his time is clearly, he's starting to kind of BJ Penn himself, you know, and I think maybe he should stay at welterweight, but he doesn't want to. So, you know, I don't know if that was an accurate indication of what Till is capable of. Till is a very calculated, very accurate puncher. He is not sloppy. You know what I mean? If he sees an opening, Thompson's going to pay for it. And so I'm undecided. I have to kind of have no backbone here and be undecided. It's been fun covering this. I got to say, I've written an article from both sides of it, and it's been fun covering this. It really has. And I expect a great fight.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you had mentioned it, distance management. I think Thompson's going to do a good job of it. I personally feel like the two best backgrounds you could have would be either karate or wrestling in MMA. Mm-hmm. Right now, the way it stands, I mean, you have some BJJ practitioners. You've got Dylan Danis, Rafael Lovato Jr., Ronnie Yaya, who you never hear of. But there's a lot of great BJJ practitioners out there. But, you know, you see what Damian Maia. Lately? Exactly. You see Damian Maia, kind of the twilight of his career, start to falter. Donald Cerrone, kind of in the same boat like Michael Bisping was, taking the fight against Kelvin Gastelum. And then a lot of people based Gastelum fighting Jacare. They said, oh, well, look what he did to Bisping. But that was after, 3 weeks after he just got knocked out by GSP.
And Jacare is well past his prime.
Yeah.
That's like, you know, Jacare was a monster at one time, and he was an animal on the ground you did not want to mess with. You went to the ground, Jacare, you might as well have been down there. I don't want to say Hoyce Gracie, but you might as well have been down there with somebody who you were, just forget it. Just tap now because you're not getting up. That's no longer the case with Jacare.
Exactly. And I was totally wrong. I mean, I had taken Jacare to win the fight simply because he looked so dominant against Derek Brunson, and Derek Brunson was fighting at home. So, I mean, for Jacare to have the wherewithal to kind of hold back after he had rocked him and then kind of went in slowly and went after him, I thought that was kind of what he might do against Gastelum. Now, Gastelum, I think he's still in the wrong weight class, but
yes, he is.
He's doing very well where he is right now.
The thing is with we're seeing kind of a gradual changing of the guard now with a lot of these guys like Jacare, and obviously he's not the same generation as Vitor Belfort. Belfort's obviously older. A lot of these older Brazilians, it seems like now, are on their way out, you know, and that whole BJJ dominant thing that we saw maybe 10 years ago is definitely switched to now it's the American collegiate wrestling is definitely the more popular choice. A lot of guys feel more well-rounded, you know, by taking up that discipline. I don't think that Gastelum is, if he was just more consistent, I think he would be a top five guy. He has done some unbelievably amazing things. again, a topic for another day, possibly, would be this ridiculous marijuana rule that he was penalized for, which is, I wrote a column about that that's coming out next week.
Well, wasn't it Claudia Gadejia that lost sponsorships over it?
And marijuana, to say that it's a performance enhancer because it allows you to heal, allows you not to feel the pain. Well, then why wouldn't Advil or Tylenol be a performance enhancer?
It does
the same thing.
Yeah. It's definitely a rough one. Cynthia Calvillo. It wasn't Claudia Gadejia. I'll save myself.
Yeah, Cynthia Calvillo. Yeah, that was just recently. Yep.
I mean, you look at other sports. You take what was it? Was it the Olympics the other year when Nicholas Backstrom in the NHL? He took what was it? It was an allergy medicine, and all of a sudden he couldn't play in a hockey game. It's the same type of thing there. I mean, poor guys. You take Nick Diaz, for instance, or either of them, really.
Yep.
It's definitely not a performance enhancer per se.
It doesn't
make much sense, and it doesn't hinder performance for sure.
No, and I have very, very strong feelings about this, which is why I actually asked permission to write this column and this piece about this. It's been done for a while, and it should be out pretty quick after fight week. And basically, right now, I just feel that we've got problems with steroids. We have problems with all types of different masks for steroids. We got these therapeutic use exemptions and states. And, you know, look at Belfort. He hadn't even fought anywhere but Brazil for how long now? And we have all those problems. And I just feel like both the UFC, the United States anti-doping agency, and the World Anti-Doping Agency puts out the banned list of substances, they need to pick their battles. And right now, marijuana is by far the lesser of the evils, and it is a waste of money, resources, time, everything you can imagine to pursue these marijuana metabolite penalties. Because we found, you know, like Diaz, what, got a 5-year suspension, and he passed 2 of the 3 tests after post-fight, and he still got, and now that got reduced to 18 months. But still, I mean, I just think it's time for, you know, the UFC and Bellator and everybody else in professional MMA to just welcome marijuana with open arms and move on.
Yeah,
You're not going to, you know, I feel very, very strong. And like I said, keep an eye out for my column on that. And I'm very proud of it, how it turned out, because a lot of people have written these things, but they haven't taken a stand one way or another. Yeah. I'm tired of that as well. So I'm an outspoken guy, as you might know, And so, I have some very, very strong feelings about that. And we're lucky to live in Canada. God bless Canada. You know, hopefully we'll finish that. We'll get everything done the way it's supposed to be to help a lot of people who need it to survive. You know, like a lot of people, I've been in hospitals, I've seen people. So yeah, it's the future, whether people like it or not.
Yeah, definitely. Totally agree with you. Looking forward to seeing the columns coming out, whether it's on marijuana or, I mean, this Darren Till column coming out today. I definitely want to read it.
An hour and a half. I tell you. I burned the midnight oil. I think I've been up for about 57, 58 hours straight.
Trying to get all this stuff done.
Oh, I'm burnt out, and I'm not at home in my office. I'm out recovering from work, you know. So it's been a busy week, but no, I appreciate the invitation. It's been fantastic, and I hope you will have me back at some point. That would be fantastic.
For sure. I definitely want to have you back on. I'm already thinking to UFC Calgary coming up. So.
Oh, I'm there. Anytime you need me, just let me know. I'm there. I'll get it set up a little bit better. You can actually see my face. And I will, I would love to be, you know, semi-regular, whatever you got. That'd be great. You're an intelligent guy. You're an intelligent guy, and I appreciate that.
Thanks so much for having you, Ty.
Well, it's my pleasure. My pleasure. And enjoy the fights. And I will personally send you a copy of that article as soon as it's out tonight.
Awesome.
I will personally send you a copy.
Thanks so much. Yeah.
Thank you so much for having me.
There you go. Episode number 13 of the Fight Night Picks podcast. I think Ty and I just hit it right out of the park there. That was an awesome interview to have Ty on. Be able to talk about all sorts of different things. UFC, Bellator, what kind of policies we could see implemented in the future. And I'm for sure going to have him back on again because that was just great. So tonight you've got LFA 40, you got Bellator 200 coming on tonight. It's on right now, but you'll have it by tape delay on the Paramount Network. I guess the prelims are actually available online at the regular scheduled time. And then on Sunday, you've got UFC from Liverpool, Thompson versus Till. So I'll be back again on Monday. We'll recap what went on this weekend, and we'll go over the fights coming up for next weekend, as well as a featured up-and-comer as well. And this week's up-and-comer will be featured on LFA 40, so make sure you check out LFA later on tonight. So see you again on Monday.